Tonight's show is sponsored by Kathy. Hey, that's me. This is Goofy.
No, it's great. You are the sponsor tonight.
Oh. She makes the coffee that keeps us going?
See, that sounded great.
It still needs some work, Jerry. I'm going to go make some coffee. I still think it sounded goofy.
High on a mountainside near the asylum in the ghost town of Jerome, Arizona, you are listening to Jerry and Kathy Wills.
You don't know why.
Comments and views expressed on the Jerry Wills Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect those of Jerry Wills, the Jerry Wills Show, the affiliates or sponsors, or Channel U.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, welcome to a Sunday night, the Jerry Wills Show. We've got a great show for you this evening. Looking forward to this a lot. Our guest is Michelle Clare. We'll be bringing her on in just a moment. let's see. I've got a couple of other guests that are lined up. I have an echo. Do I?
Yep.
Okay, I shouldn't have.
Sound like you're in a big stadium or something.
Let me kill this. All right. How about now?
Well, I don't know. It takes a little while.
All right. That was surprising. All right. Do you have anything going on now with an Echo Cat?
Say something.
All right. how would you know if I'm not talking?
You're still echoing.
Still echoing?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that isn't possible. That really isn't. This can't be happening.
You're still echoing.
All right. Well, I don't know why it's echoing, and there's nothing I can do about it except shut everything down and figure it out, I suppose. Oh, golly.
You have to mute something that you have turned on.
No, everything is muted. Everything is. Everything is set up exactly the way it's supposed to be. I don't see a reason for it happening.
Yeah.
Arturo says there's no echo on his side. It's loud and clear.
Well, maybe I'll
read the monitor to
see if that helps.
Yeah, I have no way of being able to tell, because if it was echoing, I wouldn't know it. That's why Kathy is the producer over there monitoring the stream and making sure everything is 110%. Thank you for that information, Arturo. So I guess we'll just continue on as though it's not. I mean, are you still hearing an echo after reloading? Oh, you know what? You might have two different windows open with the same thing happening. Well, we'll let Kathy work on that. Do you have shut down your Safari browser?
I can't get this damn window off of here.
Hit the escape key.
I did several times. It won't escape.
Stand by, folks. Kathy's got a problem.
I have a problem. Won't do it. Go say something. You shut it off?
No, I didn't shut it off. All right, we're going to try it again.
Try it again. Should have done this broadcast at the cafe at the end of the universe.
Yeah, I know. A cafe at the end of the universe would have been better, huh? With paranormal things going on like this. So, are you still getting an echo, Kathy?
Say
I am saying something.
It's still echoing for me.
All right. Well, then I have no idea why it's echoing. And I'm getting other people saying it's not echoing for them either. Let's see here. No echo. What does this one say?
I figured it out.
Oh, you did? Well, thank God for that. Anyway.
Playing on Vimeo too.
Oh, well, see, now that's what I was saying. If you have two different things playing the same time.
Yeah, but I found it.
Yeah, well, it's because you've got a big brain.
I'm a girl.
Yeah, you're a girl. Actually, Kathy's really damn smart. And in honor of all the chaos, I'm having a cup of chaos. So let's get on with the show, shall we? Thank you, folks, for being patient while we worked out our traumatic situation on this end. Like I was saying, I've got a really wonderful guest for you tonight. I can tell you all about other guests some other time. We've eaten up too much time goofing around. Our guest tonight is Michelle Claire. I'm going to bring her on. It's about time. It is. She is a psychic medium. She's a certified medium. We're going to find out what that means. And she does a lot of other stuff, too. I've heard a lot of wonderful things about Michelle. So let's just jump right in and say hello. Thanks for being patient and waiting and standing by.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me tonight.
You betcha. So, of course, I've got all kinds of questions I'm curious about, you know, a bit, as anybody would be. I'll try to ask some good questions, but if you think of something that should be thrown in there, go right ahead. Because like I told you, you know, the shows that we do, these are like a conversation between friends. So we'll just be casual and have a good time. And folks, you who are watching, good heavens, I shut down the radio server trying to figure out the echo. Let me restart the radio server, get that back up and running. Because there will be people listening a lot of places in the world. We are on the air now with the radio server, if you are wondering about that. If you folks have any questions, we're going to open the phone lines, you know, probably after the break. Maybe before, it just depends how things go. But we also have on Discus, on this page that you're watching us on, right down there at the bottom, Discus. You can ask questions. Kathy will be taking a look to see if there's anything coming up there that needs to be addressed. And, well, we'll just take it from there. Let's see. I can't be looking at that and trying to figure it out. So let's just start. How did this work? How did this work for you to start doing this?
It was a long process. It started when I was 12. So when I was 12, I noticed after my grandfather transitioned or passed away that he and I were still communicating, and he would tell me things to share with my mom. And I would tell my mom and she would say, "Well, I know that's what you think he would say if he was still here." And so I kind of quickly learned, okay, I guess this is just between me and grandpa. But I always felt his presence, and I knew obviously he had transitioned, but yet I knew we were still connected and having this communication and relationship. So as that went on with time, I just kind of quit telling my mom what he was saying because she wasn't really open to hearing it. And then when I was, I believe I was 20. My grandmother passed away. Same thing happened with her. Grandma transitions. Grandma's talking to me, giving me messages. Tell your mom to quit feeling so guilty. Tell your mom this. Tell your mom that. I'm telling my mom. My mom says the same thing. And that's what you think grandma would say if she was still here. So I said, okay. And so I just really learned to keep this to myself. And at that point in time, I didn't have messages for other people that I needed to share them with. Then in the year 2000, I had a near-death experience. So with this near-death experience in April 2000, I was at a hospital because my niece was already, she was born that day. And so we were there, we were visiting her and her mom. And I was standing in the hallway talking to the RN, who was actually my friend from high school. And as I was talking to her, I had a massive seizure. And I hit the floor. All I remember is waking up with my head in my grandma's lap. And I was in this room that was all white. And the walls were alive, even though they seemed like they were solid. Every molecule, every cell in these walls, it was radiating light and love. And I was looking around. I was laying on the floor with my head in her lap, looking at her. She looked like the youngest, most healthy version of grandma I could remember. And she was just smiling at me. And I was looking around, taking it all in. I look next to her, and she's got this huge angel next to her that's about 12 feet tall. And I remember just being in awe of her presence, her love, her, oh my gosh, she was radiant. And so I said, I thought in my head, I thought, what is your name? And she answered me. She said her name was Madeline. And that surprised me because I did not know about telepathic communication. And so she said her name was Madeline and that she was one of my guardian angels. And I remember going to look at her wings because I expected to see these beautiful feather wings. And I remember when I looked at them, I saw they were like light. They were like the aurora borealis. They were moving. They were colors. They were, oh my gosh, stunning. They seemed to span eternity. And as I was laying there, with no awareness of time, just enjoying where I was, all of a sudden I heard them yelling, code, code, code. And I was back in my body because I had quit breathing. And I remember feeling how heavy my arm felt, like it weighed 500 pounds. It felt so heavy and dense to be back. And so they admitted me to the hospital. They never found out what caused the seizure. But that was my first near-death experience. And at that point in time, I actually didn't even know it was a near-death experience because I didn't have the words for it. I just knew it was an experience. And it was probably a few weeks after that that I tried to share that with my mom. And my mom, she was an RN, and so she was very scientific. And she was, I could tell she believed me, but she was trying to figure out what I was saying and how that happened. So with that near-death experience, I would say I had more of an awareness of angels. It kind of, it encouraged me to know more, but I didn't do anything with that.
That's a remarkable story. It really is a remarkable story. It is to me. Maybe the folks listening, it's like just another story. Let me tell you why. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, there were folks who died, and I would talk to them, and they would give me messages. The most poignant of those was when my aunt died. My uncle was quite an alcoholic, and no one even knew she had died out on the farm. Nobody knew this, but she came to me that night and told me and gave me messages for her husband. Very important messages. I got up the next morning, had breakfast. I'm thinking to myself, I really need to tell my mom about this because it was her brother, the wife of her brother. And I told her about this dream and that she gave me messages for, you know, her husband, my Uncle Jimmy, and so on. And it was like, oh, that's just foolish. It wasn't 30 minutes later, the phone call came in. From my mother's sister, that Betty had indeed passed. And so that was just a big rush. And everybody's like, we've got to get, we were in the hills of Kentucky. They were going back to Denver, Colorado. The only person who would listen to me is my Uncle Jimmy, and so I told him the message. That's one part of your story that I identify with just completely. The other is an event that happened that led me to Kathy down in the jungle. Well, actually, the jungle and the Andes Mountains, but these beings showed up and gave me a little talking to. They were like 12 feet tall. I mean, they were just huge, radiant. I saw them again. And when I saw them again, they had like wings. And I was like, I was expecting like big bird wings or something. Yeah. But instead, it was like this beautiful aurora borealis that was emitted from behind them and just flowing upwards and just waving, you know, just waving. It was absolutely glorious. The colors were spectacular. And the feeling that I had from that was just, it was just mind-blowing. I mean, there's no words you could ever put to that. Hearing your story and being able to identify with it personally, it just blows my mind. I've never heard anyone else describe seeing an angel like that. So sorry I interrupted you, but this was your inception. Did you know before 12 years old that you had something like this going on?
You know, what I remember is I remember going to church. I was raised Catholic, and I remember they would say things and I would feel like, well, that's not right. God loves everybody. Like, there were things that I would be, you know, taught, and I was able to know that there was more. I always knew there was something bigger. I always felt, I think, surrounded by love that wasn't necessarily human love. Mm-hmm. But no, I didn't really have a word for this or a knowing, nor did anyone in my family. So it was just kind of an inner knowing.
Yeah, and you know, you can imagine back in Hills, Kentucky, even for you, where were you raised at?
In Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. Well, even in Tucson, which is a dandy place. But, you know, during this time of your life, just like for mine, there really weren't any words. There wasn't a glossary of definitions that you could pull from to say this is this and it means that. You try to put it into what you know, and you don't really have the vocabulary to adequately explain what it is that you're experiencing. It's how it was for me, and I'm sure it must have been for you as well.
It was. I do remember, too, when I was young, I used to have a lot of ESP, especially at night. I would dream, and the next day, it would all come true. And I remember, I've actually shut that down. I have yet to reopen that to the level I had it at. Yeah. But I was scared. That. I would tell my mom, I was so scared, Mom. What if one of my bad dreams comes true, you know? Honestly, none of my bad dreams ever came true. But it was just the thought that if my regular dreams could be so accurate, the fear of what a bad dream could mean as a kid was really scary for me.
Well, yeah, of course. Did you have precognition?
Yes.
I mean, otherwise, I mean, like someone said, hey, you know, the big game on Sunday and we're rooting for so-and-so. And you'd go, nah, they're not going to win. Did you ever have that?
Yeah.
I had it to such an extent that my Uncle Jimmy, the only one that would listen, started placing bets at the Kentucky Derby and, you know, with bookies on other games and such. It was illegal in Kentucky, but he did it anyway. And he ended up making enough money to buy a house.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But that's really cool that you had that going on. So we're 12 years old. You had the seizure.
No, when I was 20. When I was 12, my grandfather passed.
I'm sorry. Okay. When you were 20, mm-hmm. You had the seizure.
I'm actually thinking, I'm like, was I 20? No, I think I was 24. Yes, I was 24 when I had the seizure.
All right. So then what happened?
I honestly just went back to life like normal. I knew more. I felt, I would say, more aware of how loved I was, not from humans, but loved on this soul level. And then I just kind of went about life. And then I was married and I had kids. And so then in the year in April, no, it was May 2006, I had my second near-death experience.
Wow.
And that one was very different from my first one. So at that point in time, I had a five-year-old, a two-and-a-half-year-old, and I had my son who was an infant. And after I had, well, it was actually complications from having him. So I had him, I had infections. I was in the hospital 4 out of 6 weeks after I had him. I'd get out, go home for a few days. They'd put me back in. Finally, they got to the point where they said, we need to do a DNC. We think you have an infection in your uterus. We're just going to clear it out. 45-minute outpatient procedure. You'll be fine. And I was really tired of being sick and in the hospital. Sure. So I said, okay. But the night before I went in, I knew in my gut that I should not go. Absolutely knew. But I was so tired of being sick that I told myself, it's 45 minutes outpatient, piece of cake, just get this done. Just go. So I went. Everyone assured me the next day, quick, easy, be fine, you'll be good, we'll be done hospitalizing you. Okay. So I remember counting backwards for the anesthesiologist in the operating room. And then the next thing I know, I'm laying on the surgical table. And a couple of years before this, I had a beautiful 100-pound white German shepherd whose name was Tahoe. And at night when she was here, she would always rock around and check on me in bed. She'd lay her head on my bed, look at me, and then, you know, check on everyone else in the house. So I'm in the operating room and my beautiful white German shepherd comes in, lays her head on the gurney, and we're gone. We're just magically gone. We are on a phenomenal beach and the plants have colors that we don't have here. The ocean is stunning. Every drop of water in that ocean is radiating light and love. Every cell, every molecule on every plant. And we are running on this beach. And I notice that it doesn't feel like beach sand. It's beautiful white sand, but it feels like we're running on clouds. It's kind of soft and fluffy. And I'm looking at my beautiful dog and she looks young and healthy and we're having telepathic communication again. She's letting me know she's so happy to see me and we're just running and running. And as we're on this beach, I realize I'm not getting hungry. I'm not getting tired. I'm not getting thirsty. I'm not getting hot. I have no idea how long we've been running for, but I'm aware that by now I should be at least like wanting to stop for a drink. And kind of one of the funny things about this near-death experience is that I actually hate to run. And I tell people if they see me running to call 911 because it's like an emergency situation. So I always think that's ironic that this is my near-death heavenly experience. I'm running on the beach when in life I would rather do anything than go for a run. But as I'm on this amazing beach with my beautiful, beautiful dog, I can feel my son, who's 6 weeks old at this time, and he's at the house with my mom, energetically calling to me because he knows I'm going to leave and he's scared. And I feel myself go to him. And I said to him, I said, Josh, I will find a way to stay. And I start praying and I start asking for help. And I start saying, it's not my time. My kids still need me. I'm not ready. And then at that moment, I'm back in the operating room. I see it filling up with light. I feel Jesus come in. And I know I'm going to get to stay. And the next thing I know, I'm waking up in post-op and my 45-minute procedure had turned into a 3.5-hour emergency surgery because they had ruptured my uterus and missed my aorta by a millimeter. And then they had also ruptured my uterus in a second location. And it was just unbelievable. It really was. And it took me months to recover after all of that. But I knew what I think was so important about that near-death experience. There's a couple of things. What I realized was our soul can have multiple experiences at one time. Unlike our human body, which has to be right here, right now, my soul is in two places. It was on that beautiful beach, and it was with my son, who wasn't even at the same location, telling him I'd find a way to stay. And so that was really important. And then the other thing that I felt like was really important about that near-death experience was I started praying, I started asking for help, and I was able to usher in a miracle. And I don't think that my soul is different than anyone else's. And so I feel like if if I was able to usher in a miracle at that moment, I feel like everyone's soul is capable of ushering in a miracle.
Wow. that's really very moving. And I agree with you about your soul not needing to be only in one location at a time. One of the things that I've taught is what is it called? It's called Out of Body One. It's an audio. I think it's available in our members area. It's not that long. It's probably about half an hour long, but it's so that a person can experience what it's like to be in several locations at once and still be intact. It was something that was shown to me a long time ago by a shaman. He had his own way of doing this sort of thing. So I kind of translated it into my own method. But, you know, when you're being in a session with someone, for me, when I'm working on them, I'm in two places at once. I'm here, but I'm also there. And I'm sure that when you do your readings for folks, that with your understanding, others might not get it, but you're not just where you're sitting. You're actually in another place that's undefinable, where there isn't any distance or time. It just exists, and you can go there pretty easily if you know how. So that's pretty remarkable. And how old were you when this happened?
When that one happened, I was 32.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then there was a third occasion. What happened then?
Yeah, because two aren't enough, right?
not for you, apparently so. You just like it over there. That's what it is.
I know. I keep getting sent back, right?
Yeah.
So the third one that happened, on 11-1-11. So for people who like numbers, that's a lot of ones. I had my younger two kids at home. So my oldest was in fifth grade. And then I had my 5 and 8-year-old home with me. And we have 14-foot ceilings in our house. So up about 12 feet off the ground, I have these candles that are battery operated, and you put the battery in and every night they turn on and glow for 6 hours and turn off. So I had my younger two, and I said, as soon as I get done putting this candle back up, we're going to go get your sister. I remember climbing up the ladder, and as I got to the top of the ladder, I felt it start to shift. And I remember thinking, oh, this is going to hurt, because I knew it was going down. And at that moment, I was literally ripped out of my body, not in a painful way, but in a fast way. And I was turned around and I was facing my body and the ladder suspended in the air. And I was standing with these three people that I had never met, but they felt like close family or friends. I felt like I knew them very, very well. One was a Hawaiian man, one was an Egyptian lady, and the other one was an Asian man. And they were standing there with me and they said, what would you like to do? Would you like to stay or go? And I was just standing next to them trying to understand how I wasn't being rushed to make this decision. I had forever to decide, and I could see my body and I knew it was going to hit the ground in less than a second. And they were just kind of like, well, what would you like to do? And I was just pondering this. And as I was looking at my body and I was feeling that unconditional love, but in this one, I'm very much still in my kitchen, but I can feel those heavenly feelings around me. I see this beautiful angel come in, different angel than from my first NDE. This angel comes in, and as they come in, I know that this angel is there to follow through with my wishes. So if I decide to go home, I'm going straight home with this angel. And if I decide to stay, this angel is going to make something happen so that I can stay. As I'm standing with these three people, I see my younger two kids. And I know as soon as I see them, I can't go, that they need me. And in the moment that I choose to stay, It is like I am downloaded with tons of information. And honestly, to this day, I don't even think that I remember a lot of what was said to me, but some of it was, okay, but you've got to go back. You've got to do the work that you can do only the way that you do it. Because even though there are so many mediums, everybody has their own individual soul print and their soul connection, right? And so I was told I had to go back. I had to do my work. I had, they said being a mom was amazing, but it was not my only purpose. And up until that point in time, I kind of felt like being a mom was my only purpose. And so they just gave me a lot of information. The next thing happens, I fall. So I hit the back of my head on the corner of my granite kitchen island. I had a 5.5-inch skull fracture that went from the base up. I had a brain bleed up here. I had lost my taste, my smell, part of my hearing, my equilibrium. And it was really difficult. But when they took me to the hospital and they did the CAT scan, what they found was I literally survived the fall by 0.5 inch because I missed my brainstem by 0.5 inch. And so that was a really difficult and life-changing experience for me. So I was in the hospital for probably about 10 days, but not in good shape when I came home. I mean, I needed help just to walk and things like that because my equilibrium was off. And yet I came back with a sense of gratitude. I was so happy that I was going to live to raise my kids. It was not of this world because I had lost so much. And as I came back and continued to improve. I mean, one of the funny side notes was I broke my arm during that. When the cast came off my arm 6 weeks later, my kids basically thought, oh, mom's fine. Her cast is off now, you know, because the visible sign of my damage was gone. I did not feel fine. But as time went on, we went through, you know, got through the holidays, and then it was January 2012. So my son, Josh, who was 5 at this point in time, started getting very depressed because he told me and he told my mom, my mother-in-law, anyone who would listen. He had tried to call 911 to get me help, but his call had not gone through. And we thought he had maybe dialed 991 or it was a very traumatic situation. And so he would tell us, he would say, I did nothing to help you, mom. I didn't need to be there. Sophie could do it without me. And we would say, Josh, you opened the door for the policeman. You helped. There was nothing we could say that would give him this sense of self-worth again. The end of January, my grandfather, who passed away when I was 12, came through to me. And very rarely, very, very rarely, does spirit actually manifest to me. And he did. And he talked to me about my accident and my head injury. And he talked to me about my son, who he never knew in this life. They walked this earth decades apart. And he said to me, you know, he's good with electronics. You should get the 911 recording. There's something on there that you should know. I didn't even know I could get the 911 recording. So that was surprising to me. So I went down and I ordered it, and it took a couple of weeks to come in. And I played it, and they say, 911, what's your emergency? And in his little broken voice, I hear him say, Sophie, what do I say? And then he lays the phone down. So he had called, and his call had gone through. He called right when the trauma had happened, and he had actually forgotten he had called. So for the next minute and a half, you can hear 911 trying to get their attention, saying, what's happening? Can you hear us? And then you hear him tell my daughter he's going to go push the panic alarm button. And she says, hold on, let me try to call 911 first. She hangs up the phone, and then her call comes through. And then you can hear her on there talking to them, and they actually connect her with the fire department. And I will always remember what she told me afterwards. She said, she was 8 at the time, and she said, you know, mom, she said, the firemen turned on their sirens so that I could hear them coming. So I knew they were coming to help us. And I just thought, oh my gosh, wow.
Wow. So did you relay this information to your son? Did he find out about this?
Yes, he came home from kindergarten. I never played the CD for them because it actually was traumatic sounding. But he came home from kindergarten and I said, Josh, I got the 911 CD. Your call went through. Help was coming. And it was like lifting a 10,000 pound weight off this little five-year-old boy. You could see his self-worth because I helped her. This, oh my gosh, he became so empowered. And it was, we would go out to eat at the restaurant and the server would say, how's your day going? And he'd say, great, my 911 call went through. It was life-changing. That's life-changing for him.
What a thing. You know, that's just remarkable. Yeah, I imagine, that would be just a horrible thing to think that you just were incapable. I'm glad that you got that recording. That makes a huge difference in his life, obviously.
And had my grandfather not come through and told me to get that, I would have never done that. Didn't even know it was an option.
Wow. So you were downloaded with information. Was this information that you had partial access to, or did it start seeping in over time?
Yeah, it seemed to start seeping in over time. Honestly, after the head injury, there was just so much physical trauma I was working through. I couldn't even focus on the spiritual stuff that had happened.
Sure.
But my grandfather coming through and talking about the 911 recording was huge. And at that moment, I realized, oh, wait, this is big. This changes lives. And it couldn't have changed the life of someone I loved any more than my son, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so then I started almost having memories of maybe things that they had told me. And then I would go meet a friend for lunch and all of a sudden, their loved one would pop in and I was going like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know what to do with this. So I ended up finding, I went to counseling first because I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy. So I did that and, just covering my bases and of course, as spirit would have it, they led me to the perfect counselor who said, Michelle, this is a gift. We've got to find someone who can mentor you. This is amazing. And so then I started mentoring with different people and learning how to really, to use this. At first, I didn't feel like I could reach out and get it. It felt like it just came in and was downloaded on me. And then I started, with years of training, learning that, oh, wait, I can access this. I can go out and get this. I can call them in. Like we have options.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you had the opportunity to get, with someone that could give you some validation. That kind of happened for me, too. I mean, there were those who mentored me. They in Phoenix at the time were considered luminaries. I didn't know that. I was new to Phoenix. They were just these people that seemed to be really interesting and fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think probably the most noteworthy of those would be Dr. Richard Ireland. But, Frank Baranowski, Jan Ross, those folks took a genuine interest in me and just kept promoting, learn about this, learn about that. Jan Ross had a bookstore and she was always giving me books off the shelf. You've got to read this because it's part of your development. Your evolution depends on it. Wow. When I fell out of the airplane hangar, I had somewhat of a similar situation, except, I was told while I'm looking down there at myself, I was told, I couldn't stay. You have to go back. And boom, just that fast, I was blown back into my body and it hurt. Mm-hmm. It took a full day, actually, before everything was healed. It was a very strange set of circumstances. I know that probably sounds strange. A lot of stuff was broken, and the next day it wasn't. But I came back, like you came back with these bits and pieces. I did too. And I heard you say earlier you came back with this feeling of being grateful, for the life and to be able to do something and so forth. And I did too. And one of the things that I brought back with me was how precious life is, that it just in an instant it's gone. The veil is so thin. So, yeah, you've had some experiences, kiddo. Absolutely.
I have. And you're right. It truly is a gift. And I believe there are souls lined up waiting to come here. And this is our chance to play in the magic of life, because that's what our souls came to do.
Absolutely right. I agree with you completely. You know, life is an incredible gift. And there are those who just don't really even recognize that to be true. But, oh, well. So you do a number of different things with your gifts. Do you have what you figure is your strongest thing? Is there any one thing, I guess, what I'm trying to say, that is just like, I do this and I do this the best of everything?
Yeah, I think I specialize in mediumship, I would say. That's where I feel. But I would also say that when I feel like I'm talking to angels and life guides, to me, that's also still mediumship. It's just soul-to-soul connection,
sure.
Right? So I think mediumship is definitely my strongest suit. And I would also say with that, it's one of the things I love the most, because I see so much life change come out of it.
And when you're doing this with mediumship, do you hear them in your head? Do you hear them outside here around you? Do you see them? How does that work for you?
That's a great question. So most of the time I get my information through feelings. So I describe this as when you look at someone that you know really well and you know exactly what they're going to say before they say that. That's how the information comes through me. When I'm in a reading, I'll say, I feel the number four. I feel the color blue. I feel things in my normal daily life. I don't feel those things. But when I'm doing mediumship readings, I do. So most of it comes through feelings. Sometimes I will see things or I'll hear a word. I will often get a physical sensation, like say they'll take me to the heart if they pass from a heart attack, or the brain if there's a stroke. So, I mean, I'll get some idea usually too of how they physically transition.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's very interesting. What else do you do?
Well, so I do the angel communication. I communicate with life guides, and I do healing work also. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I mean, yes, I'm a Reiki master, but I don't actually think I do Reiki. I just feel like I'm channeling angelic healing angel energy. I think I also like to do life coaching, in the sense that a lot of times I'll do mentoring for people or life coaching where I check in with their spirit team and I just say, okay, what are their challenges and where do we need to go and how do I work with this person? And so my life coaching probably looks different than a lot of people's, but it's kind of me checking in with your team and seeing what we need to know to get you where you need to go.
Sure. And I imagine, you know, as it is for me, for you, it must be that you're touching into multiple areas simultaneously. The conversation doesn't just go veering off into healing, but you start picking up on different pieces and parts, and it all becomes this tapestry that you present to others. Would you say that's true?
100%. A lot of times I'll get past life information on someone. I'll get information about blocks, energetic blocks that they have in their body, or physical issues that they have in their body. It's almost like, I would say, when I open up, I would truly feel like there's nothing I can't know. I just don't always go with a specific direction. A lot of times I just let spirit lead me, because I know spirit knows where they need to go and what needs to happen. Sometimes, I mean, there are times obviously when I have intentions, but one of the things I love about what I do, and probably the way you work too, it's kind of like a radio. It's all frequency. And we also have the ability to zoom in or zoom out. So we can, okay, you want to talk to grandma? Okay, I'm going to channel 103. Okay, let's pull back out. What do you just want a message from the universe? Okay, let's see what the universe is saying today.
Sure. Well, here's a loaded question for you, because this is something that I'm familiar with, happens to me. I'm just wondering, because I'm picking your brain. I'm wondering if you have similar things too. the first part of this, do you ever sit with someone and you start getting things that just like, oh, that's just really screwed up, or, ooh, that's dark and ugly. You know, things that you just as soon wouldn't want to know about. There's, you know, I've had to turn this off for myself. I call it psychic voyeurism. But do you ever find yourself suddenly just getting like all this stuff that you really shouldn't know or you really don't want to know?
Occasionally, not too much, but there are some times where I look at someone and I feel like actually like maybe I know they were abused as a child and they haven't even remembered that yet. Or I know some things that they don't know. So there are occasions where I know stuff that I'm not even sure my client knows.
Got it. How about when you're in a group of people or just out in public? Do you have to keep your psychic ability in check? Like throw a blanket over it, metaphorically speaking? Or do you just let it go?
No, I don't know. I think of it, my whole work is based on the radio analogy. When I'm working, I turn my volume up. And when I'm out at the grocery store or running to Target, I turn my volume down. Spirit will always find a way to tell me something if I need to know. But I'm not walking through Target or Safeway seeing everyone's grandma or everybody's loved one around them.
Mine has been freezing a lot.
Excuse me a second, Michelle. What's that again, Kat?
Okay.
Video's been freezing a lot.
All right.
Other people say it too.
For you who are watching, if the video is freezing, we have a digital recording of this. It will be uploaded after this program, so you'll get the entire show that way, of course. I don't have any idea why it would be freezing. I mean, we've got absolutely spectacular bandwidth right now. So it must be no telling why it's happening.
I think it's me. I'll be honest with you, Jerry. I mess up electronics. I don't know how. I don't know why. we have a problem.
Yeah. And see, I fix electronics. So we're like fire and mud.
We are. I've literally had a friend who I went to his house to do a podcast. He's very good at electronics. And he was like, "It took me a week to get things straightened out after you left. I literally didn't even touch anything. I was just in his house. I don't know how to fix that in my energy. If you have advice, I'd love some."
Oh, there's probably no way of doing it. Electronics doesn't have a mind, and it just goes wacky whenever a lot of other energy comes in close to it. So don't worry. Be happy. It just okay. is.
I will tell you something that you brought up earlier that I want to get into with you. You talked about working with Richard Ireland. Yeah. So his son, Mark Ireland, is actually who helped me become a certified medium. Wow. So Mark's son passed away unexpectedly from an asthma attack when he was 18. And he started finding that mediumship, obviously he was very familiar with all of this because his dad was Richard Ireland. And
yeah,
so
phenomenal.
He knew about this world. And so with that, when his son passed, he started realizing like, gosh, there is a lot of comfort in mediumship readings. But there's also, as you know, people in this world that are not legitimate. And that's a struggle for those of us who are the real thing. And so with that, he created this program to certify mediums. Wow. And the way that works is he would tell me, okay, Wednesday at 11, log on. And I would just log on to a blind Skype reading, blank screen, couldn't see who was there, and just start going, okay, I have an 18-year-old boy, I have this, I have that, and giving them the information. And so they go through and score everything. And so after you do 5 blind readings, then he certifies you if you pass, and if not, you know, there you go. But that's how you become a certified medium.
I was going to ask you about that because I've heard the term before, but I didn't really know what that meant. And you're right. He should know what mediumship is. Richard, he did some things that were so beyond everyone else. And there are very few people that I've ever encountered that were at his level of ability. So, yeah, but that's pretty cool. So you got certified. You must have scored pretty high.
At the time I did it, I was the highest scoring medium he had had. He literally said, "I'm coming to Phoenix. I'll be there in 2 weeks. I have to meet you." I said, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's very, very good. So I'd say that's probably your strongest suit right there.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. But, you know, how it is, you don't want to be limited by anything because this ability is an unlimited ability. know, the dynamics are where you put the borders. It really doesn't have an edge to it. It just keeps on going. So when you're doing your readings, I know I asked you about it, you know, how you perceive it, but have you ever seen, do they ever just appear to you?
Yeah. I mean, spirit will just come through and give me messages and tell me things. Sometimes it's just for myself, or sometimes it will be before my client gets here. And I'm, you know, I always laugh because I'm like, okay, there's something about me when I am blow drying my hair in the morning, spirit comes in. They want to talk when I'm blow drying my hair. That's when I get the biggest downloads from everyone's loved ones. So I'm like, okay, but yes, they will come in and then I'll just be like, okay, remind me later, or I'll make a note because I want to, you know, make sure I don't forget it when I, you know, get to the, but yes, spirit will come through. Spirit will give me messages a lot of times before their loved ones get here. I had a friend whose dad passed away. He came through to me in the morning at like 6 a.m. and told me he'd passed before I talked to her and knew. So something similar to the situation you had. And what I think is really important about that is a lot of times people will contact me and say, like, how long do I have to wait? Do I have to wait 3 months, 6 months? Like, what's the time frame for my loved one? And I'm like, there is no time frame. They're ready now. When you're ready is the right time. Your loved one's already ready.
Well, for me, it seems like it takes, maybe they're busy with other people, but but it seems like it's on 2 or 3 days, maybe a week, and they'll show up and go, hey, good to see you. How you doing? You know, for me, sometimes if I allow it, I see them just like I'm seeing you, just right there. I do get, you know, some of the things you're talking about that you do. And that's why I was asking if you see them, I mean, physically see them or feel them like tap you on the shoulder or, you know, poke at your face or something to get your attention. Because I've had all that. And I'm just wondering if you had as well.
I have had it, but I do not think it's to the extent that you have. I feel like when I'm in a reading, they're very respectful. So one of the things.
Oh, this isn't during a reading. This isn't during a reading. Yeah. This is like I'm walking somewhere and I see them. It's like, how you doing? And they just look at me and go, oh, I'm doing good. And they start talking. And I find out later that they're just dead people.
I do not have that experience. I don't. That would be a confusing experience to have.
It is. Oh, my God, I could tell you stories. How about haunted houses? Have you gone into a haunted house?
I have one ghost story. So ghosts are not my specialty, but I do have a ghost story. So I got invited to IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, to do a study for them.
Yep.
And as I went out there, we stayed in Petaluma at a hotel. My oldest one, went with me. So we got there early to drop off our baggage. And I walked in and I was like, oh, this place feels haunted. Like, I just knew there was a lot of energy. I didn't see anything, nothing happened. And then I thought, well, I'm not going to say anything to her. I don't want to freak her out because I think she was, you know, about 17 at the time. And so we just went, put our rooms in the bag, went to IONS, did this study. Then we went out to dinner. When we were at dinner, she said to me, well, you know, Mom, that hotel is haunted. And I said, well, how did you know that? And she said, well, you can just feel it. So I said, okay. So we go back to our room that night. I cannot get the thermostat to stay above 65. Like, it keeps dropping. It keeps dropping. And I keep turning it up every 30 seconds. Like, it is insane. And so she says, well, I'm going to bed. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go take a shower. So I go get in the shower and I'm in here. And of course, this is February. So it's cold up in San Francisco. And I am in the shower. And in the exact same moment, the lights turned off in the bathroom and the water went ice cold. And I could see this elderly woman. And I started screaming like, Ashley, get, you know, because I'm in this dark bathroom, the water's ice cold, I'm screaming. So I get out, I grab a towel, I turn on the light, and she's like, what? And I said, oh my God. I said, this elderly woman just like turned off the lights and changed the water in the exact same second from warm to ice cold. And she was like, okay, well, I'm going back to bed. And I said, what? And she said, well, I know you'll handle it. And so I'm like, okay, so how am I going to handle this? So, you know, before I go to bed, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do here? So I start talking to her and I can feel her communicating with me. She's been there about 50 years. I have no idea what that looks like in ghost time. I know what it feels like to have no time. And I know what earth time feels like, but I don't know what ghost time is. But she was afraid to go under the light. She thought she was going to be judged for a lot of stuff she had done. And I can see her, and she is elderly. She is hunched over. She has a cane. And so I start calling in her angels. I start calling in the light, and I start telling her, you're going to be okay. This is where you need to go. And I just start bringing in all this light, and I see these two huge angels come in, and they walk her up to the light. The minute she steps into the light, I can see her from behind, from this crippled woman, stand up into this young, I don't know, 30-year-old, and she's gone. And then the temperature in my room was fine the rest of the night, and I slept like a baby.
What a thing. That is wild.
That's my only ghost experience. I don't have a lot of ghost experiences. I don't think I'm a ghost specialist. I certainly don't know that I like that energy, but I don't know. What about you?
It's a whole different thing altogether. I mean, you can imagine if you can see them, then I see them, then, I mean, it isn't like absolutely 100% all the time. But you go into a place that's haunted, you can feel them like you're talking about, and you can sense there's something going on. And of course, for me, I'm hearing, you know, little bits and pieces of conversations, perhaps, or words that's being spoken. I don't make a lot of sense of it at first. It just spooks me out. And then, you know, and that's if I'm not prepared. But if I go into a place that actually is known to be haunted, and I willingly go in there, then I try to open all this stuff up so that they can work. Mm-hmm. And you know, the things that I've seen have been probably make some pretty good stories. We were in Mexico at Guanajuato. There is a fortress there where I think the revolution, I think it's where it ended, but they had people's heads on pikes, and it was just a bloody situation altogether. And the workers were trying to restore this place as a national historic location. And they found out that I could, you know, I was there, you know, for doing classes and talking, healing and such. And they said, well, would you like to go visit a haunted fort? Sure. Because our workers are having trouble. Wheelbarrows get turned over. Things get dismantled after they put them back together again. So it's just a mess. So went in there, and of course, 11 o'clock at night seems to be a good time. I don't know why. I guess because it's just really dark. Went in there, and there's all these people. It's a long story. I'm not going to go into it at great length. But end result was, like you had to call in the angels, there were women and children in there, and soldiers, and farmers. And I called in the angels, and there was a portal that opened up, and all these angels showed up for each one of these people. And they went to them and lovingly took them into the light. It was just mind-blowing, really. I'd never seen such a thing as that.
Sounds amazing.
It was, you know, it was a real trippy time. I mean, who would have thought? But that's why I was wondering, you know, if you've actually, I mean, have you ever thought about just going into a haunted house? Just like, hey, guess what, Michelle? Kathy and I are going to go to this haunted house and see what we can do. Want to come along? If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. Subscriptions and your comments cost nothing, but it really helps us out a lot. To hear the entire interview you were just listening to and many, many other amazing interviews within our archives, please visit jerrywillsshow.com and become a member. Your membership supports our ongoing broadcasts. That's jerrywillsshow.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this program.